everybody, and welcome to this edition of Your Music Your Way, the powerful path of sound improvisation for accessing innate genius and for liberating your unique and precious gifts. I'm here today with Salomon Masala, who is going to be talking about rhythm in the workplace today, and I'm really excited to be welcoming him here. Welcome, Salomon.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure to get to connect with you and talk about and share about something that I just love. So thanks for putting this together.
This is great. This is great. So this happens in the context of this time. We're actually recording this just a few days before the summit, Your Music Your Way, launches. And this whole summit was created in the context of wanting to learn how to navigate in the unknown with mastery and with a level of competence and capability that humans are capable of, but a lot of times we don't really practice. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating that we created this summit before this whole coronavirus thing happened, right. And here we are now. We're going to be really looking at really feeling this whole sense of the unknown and uncertainty in a way that maybe many of us have never felt in our lives. And so by bringing that context into this summit and talking with a bunch of people that have facility and experience with improvisation and also with music, there's a really powerful constellation here of wisdom that people like you bring, Salomon. And I'm excited about the pulling together of mindfulness and improvisation and sound, that combination pulled together into tools that can really be used, that we can use to help us learn how to navigate this very strange see that we are now aware that we exist in. So Salomon in particular, you bring 25 years of professional experience and an engaging magnetism. That's clear. Salomon delivers the antidote to the usual team development and people training experiences. He's pioneered a captivating blend of experiential and innovative processes designed to get people ignited for excellence, have an inspiring time doing it, and sustain breakthrough learning for the long run. That is so cool.
Yes.
Programs are masterfully experiential, meaning people get up and out of their seats and they experience and engage and they do what's being learned. Learning not only sticks and keeps expanding after the training, but excellence gets hardwired. I love that. Whether it's people and organizational development processes, interactive keynotes, corporate training, or large-scale interactive rhythm programs, Salomon brings dynamic potency and passion and playfulness to the learning. And he's here today to talk about Groove Elixir. I love that. Those two words. If that's all I take from this whole summit, it's like Groove Elixir, baby. Medicine of rhythm. So welcome again, Salomon. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a great intro. Thanks so much. I want to do that stuff.
Yeah, that sounds really good. So I'd love to start with a little bit of background about you. You know, what is it that brought you to this kind of work, and how did you get originally inspired to do this, to walk this path in your life?
Beautiful. So for me, I grew up in a culture where, as many Caribbean cultures, music just infuses the flow of life, not even in a cliche way. It just simply is there. I grew up in what I would consider a groove culture, reggae. I'm from Jamaica, right? So reggae has been exported all over the world. But just the feeling of people singing by the roadside as you're walking, of people gathering and dancing and moving to music. Music, the expression of music, was always something that I've been around in my own life context. So I know that definitely influenced it right off the bat. I actually started off playing the guitar and then the clarinet, interestingly enough. And then when I moved to the United States when I was a young teen, I decided, I can't play the clarinet because I want to do marching band. And so let me play the saxophone. So I played the saxophone. But the entire time I was playing the saxophone, I was always craning my neck to see what the drum line was doing, right?
Wow.
And that's what I was cueing off of, man. Always just watching those guys on the rototoms and the bass, just all of it, just loved it. And those are the songs. In fact, some of the parts for drumline from my high school are still in my mind. I realized just what a natural flow the expression of rhythm had for me, and the expression of music in general, but the rhythm really captivated me. My background is as an educator, so I've taught K through all the way up through community college, and then have entered the realm of organizational development consulting. But for me, as a natural kinesthetic learner, as soon as I started learning drumming, all of a sudden my thought was, how do I share this? How do I get everybody excited about doing this with me? Because yes, drumming can be done by oneself. Lots of deep experiences can come from that. It's the sharing of it in community, though, that really wakes it up even a whole nother level. So for me, it was, how do I turn this into something that we can learn without even calling it learning? How do we share this? And so myself and colleagues and my first drum teacher, Larry Spiegel Kulu, back there in Colorado, who really got me started on that path.
Thanks,
He
Larry.
and I started playing around with things that we could do instead of having the participants or the audience, excuse me, watching just the rhythm. What could they do to get into it with us, right? How did we, because rhythm is a social thing in and of itself. So it kind of branched off from there and took off as something that was just following inspiration. How do I get more people engaged in what I'm doing when we're creating rhythm? How do we use this as a metaphor for concretely learning skills that we develop in teams, in social groups, in community?
So two questions spring to mind. One is why rhythm so innately social, and why do you think that's something that sort of wants to be shared like that? And then what are some examples of how rhythm can be a metaphor for some of these other kinds of skills you're talking about?
Sure. So I think to answer the first part of the question, why is it so innately social? That's a really good question. I think there's one can find so many wonderful scientific studies on the benefits of rhythm, and the impact it has even on our immune system and the way that it pumps us up with good things in our body. I think just from the social standpoint, though, when you think about what I can do in such a way that someone else can join me and we have a sense of flow together and it feels good when we're doing it, and yet I'm not controlling what you're doing and you're not controlling what I'm doing, but what we're doing has this magical feeling of being greater even than what both of us are doing. I think therein lies some of the beauty of the social element of rhythm. Because if I'm grooving along and you come on in and you listen, one of the metaphors inherent in it, you listen and you're like, hey, I'm going to join this conversation. It's not about taking over. It's about, let me add my voice to it and see where we can lift it. And all of a sudden, when we're doing that in a way that's generative, what you're doing, what I'm doing lifts both of us. Someone else joins in. And they can start feeling the energy of it, not just the music of it, but the energy of connection that starts happening. I would say that's a
And then,
key
so
element of the
like there's
soul.
a real, I'm sorry, what was that last part?
I would say that's just a key element of the social magnetism that happens in rhythm.
I see. Yeah. When you were talking there, it struck me about experiences that I've had where it's that where it feels like the thing that, like you're saying, that the experience is sort of transcendent to. Like it couldn't be happening, obviously it couldn't be happening without these other people, but it sort of can go to this place that can be surprising, and
Yes.
it's the quality of the kind of experience that it can turn into. It's more than just three drums happening, it's this other thing.
It really is a concrete manifestation of the sum of the parts being greater, or whatever that metaphor is,
Yeah, the
right?
whole being greater than the sum of the parts, yeah.
Exactly. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. That's it. And I think the human need to feel a meaningful, uplifting, fulfilling connection happens so simply in that experience of rhythm. that something just gets satisfied, and then it's generative. It builds on itself. You know, all of a sudden I'm looking at you, you're looking at me, and we're hearing this thing that we're doing together and going, wow, man,
it's really fun.
We're doing this. Hey, come check this out. Come join. Right.
Yeah. And then it gets to be this, you know, I'm so in my brain so often, and I know I'm not alone in that. And one of the things that I think is fascinating is that the situation that you're describing gets to take us into this other physical, emotional, social, transcendent kind of space, and the analysis can kind of drop away because it's not near as much fun, and you can sort of have this other thing going on that gets to be a whole lot of, you know, like joy and surprise and delight.
It's beautiful that way. One of the things I always say when I'm working with beginners or not so beginners with respect to rhythm, whether we're learning a traditional rhythm, whether we're in a community groove experience, is you cannot get this wrong. That's the first thing that I say. And I reiterate that a few times. You can't get this wrong. The second thing is, if you can get a sound out of your instrument, you're in, right? Because that's just that opening up of, let me explore this. And then to tap into what you're saying about the somatic element of it, it is always a full body experience. Now, I can try to make it not, I can try to stay in my head. And I watch in programs so many times, over and over again, I can see the person who's thinking about it too much, especially when it starts. And they're thinking about, oh, I'm not good enough, oh, I don't know how to do this, or I'm not musical. And inevitably, like Gloria Estefan said, rhythm is going to get you, right? Inevitably, those are the people who come up at the end of the program going, where do I get one of these, right? Because the moment I drop out of the analytic mind and into that space of feeling, my heart does open. And this is not a New Age concept. This is a granular individual experience of, I'm not thinking about it so much. Now I'm just letting myself feel it. Mm-hmm. And when you have a group of people who are just letting themselves feel it, and that flow opens up, you get a human to human connection that is always fulfilling.
So beautiful. And it's available to anyone.
It's so available. I mean, that's the other thing that I love about rhythm. I don't, you know, if we're going to hit two sticks together, there's not much technique. I mean, I love the violin. I love all the instruments. I have such deep respect for all of the instruments. And yet I know picking up a flute, it's going to take me some time before I feel like I can let myself explore. Whereas picking up a drum, all of a sudden, I don't have to know the technique on this thing. I can be a two-year-old walking up to it, and I automatically even know what to do. I get a response. I can start to explore. And that's the beautiful thing. That's part of why I call it an elixir, because one element of the elixir is something that just does the body good. And it's easy to take in. That feeling of watching a two-year-old walk up to a drum and see them immediately have the experience of being able to improvise, to explore, and get that feedback of, wow, this is me. This is me expressing here in the world. And I don't have to think too hard about it. I don't have to learn a whole complicated way of holding my fingers or holding the bow. I can just simply let my hands move around the entire instrument. Again, there's something really fulfilling about that as well.
So I'd like to ask you to expand on that a little bit. Why is it so, I guess I'll ask two sides of that question. Why is it so valuable to be able to just make something up on the fly? And I guess the other side of it is, why is that so scary for so many people?
Okay, let's start with the scary part, then we'll go to the good news. I think the scary part comes from the predominant message in, I'll speak for our United States culture, on having to be good at something. And there is the continual reinforcement, our school system, you either get it wrong or you get it right. And if you're going to get it right, you've got to put a lot of time and effort into it. There isn't a lot of space for let's explore the learning process and voila, hey, look at what we came up with. There is more that sense of you just got to get this right. And if you don't get it right, there's emotional consequence for that, right? And so the more we're conditioned of the emotional consequence, the shame or the I'm not good enough, those tapes start playing, man. And so when it's all of a sudden time for me to just explore, it's almost like that's been conditioned out of me. So the good news is it's always still there. And so if I have come up against the fear of being able to explore, to learn forward, to experiment, to improvise, that all I have to start doing is giving myself permission to do so. And there's an element of my being that will just start naturally opening back up. And that's one of the things I love about rhythm because it's one of the ways we can start doing that. And the metaphor connected to life is, well, this may not have been my opus, but my goodness, look at what I learned getting here. My goodness, look at what I was able to express in this process. My goodness, look at the connections that I had with other people as I did this. That's all generative. Well worth it.
It was a step. It was a step toward something. It was a step. I learned something. I love that. I had an experience I didn't expect to have. And
Yes.
I went through that little bit of fear there, and nobody, threw stones. And
Yes. Yes, exactly.
it was, oh, that was kind of fun, and it wasn't as bad as I expected. And
Right. Right,
wow.
right. And so that's the context I believe that community rhythm, interactive rhythm programs hold for folks. And one of the ways that I find it to be an elixir, a groove elixir, is it really allows people to come into a space where there's safety in being able to explore and experiment. And then there's also a sense of belonging. And again, the research on belonging these days, one can Google and find a tremendous amount about it. But that sense of psychological safety, which is connected to me allowing my natural genius to emerge. Rhythm is one of those contexts when facilitated right, that really allows folks to drop all the armoring, drop all the persona, and just be, just explore, just let that experiment happen. And wow, 9 times out of 10, it's actually pretty rocking. Maybe 9.9 times out of 10.
So what if I'm a real Scrooge and I come in and I say, yeah, all that feel good is great, and yeah, it's lovely to for have people to feel good about themselves, and we've got a job to do and we need to hit these, and how is this gonna, my people are just gonna be sitting around and they're just gonna be, loosey goosey all the time, and we're not going to get stuff done. I mean, how is this going to help the company hit those numbers next quarter?
Great question. Great question. Now, it would be too simplistic of me to say that if you do an interactive rhythm session, it's going to solve all your organizational problems. That's not so, right? It's a complex menu of elements that you bring to the development of your people that support that high performance development to emerge. Why I would utilize rhythm as one of those pieces to get us there, to get us to those numbers. Is again, I'll refer back to the study that Google did of high performance work teams, and that one of the core elements they found in that process was psychological safety. Do I feel comfortable being able to share who I am and the perspectives that I have, even if they differ from the rest of the team, without feeling like there's going to be any blowback towards me? One of the things that happens when we're grooving together, and it's a metaphor that we concretely bring forward, is one, you can't get it wrong. And two, what everybody's bringing is something that's going to help us all attain something we couldn't individually. What you have to share belongs here. So we're literally practicing the concept, we're flexing the muscle, we're building the muscle around what does it feel to create a sense of belonging in a context where people feel that belonging and that psychological safety. And then what is it for myself to express in a context like that where I can look around and go, yeah, this, it's true. That's what's happening here, right? So by repeating processes like that, we move the team process forward. And when people feel safe and they know that they can bring their perspectives, that's where innovation lies. So if I'm feeling safe to create in this context, we extrapolate that into the context where it's like we're trying to iterate another design of whatever it is that we're doing. And I feel comfortable saying, what about this? Which may not necessarily be the solution, but it'll sure lead us in another direction. Mm-hmm. Or bring new information into the field so we can tap into that collective knowledge.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love that that response, because it speaks not only to the power of being able to do something harmoniously with a group, but it also, especially you know that point about it makes it possible for any of the particular individuals to see that, yes, there's this thing that's happening, but it's also okay to insert something that might rock the boat, or that might be disturbing to the, you know, it might be a disturbance in the force.
Yes.
But it won't result in my exile. You know, it won't.
Exactly. Especially if where I'm coming from is, hey, let's explore, right? If my intention is, let's see what else we can do here. One of the metaphors that we use sometimes in the rhythm process when we're doing this in a corporate setting, I do this also in community and youth settings too, is to demonstrate what happens if I just come in and play something without listening, without tuning in. Sure, we have the like, okay, you tried that. But if my intention is disruption, right? My intention is disruption. Notice the lack of, or the incoherence that's created in myself and in the group. And if what we're talking about is that feeling of I'm committed to working together, it's got to start with that baseline commitment. Then what I want to do first is I want to listen and sense, what's the common ground? And one of the pieces of work that I do in corporate training is all around breakthrough conversations, how to have that tough conversation. And one of the inherent pieces in the rhythm experience is there is always common ground, meaning there's always the pulse. Mm-hmm. So if I'm able to pause long enough to feel, sense, hear, to listen, which is key in tough conversations, let me really listen to what you're saying. A common ground can be found. Doesn't necessarily mean we're going to agree. Doesn't mean we're all going to play the same part. It does mean, though, that I can find where that solid base is, so that I can go, oh, yeah, okay, that's the part that we have in common. We can play off of that.
Yeah. And with that, then we can create, you know, we can sort of come together around that and then start to create some of the complexity from that ground.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I show people on piano, or that I think about on piano and show my clients, is that these lower notes, you know, are literally vibrating at a slower frequency than these guys up here. And a lot of times I think of the, you know, the differences that we have, the different opinions that we have are kind of up here, you know, up in these high frequency areas. But that, you know, one of the ways to come back together, if you're wanting to make something musical, like here, this thing may be happening, right? It's this, that's just kind of horrible. But if I come down and I play another note below down here, when I start playing lower frequency notes, you know, then all of a sudden these two notes down here can really be beautiful.
Yes.
So that lower frequency helps to provide a context within which these differences can actually go, oh, it was really good that difference existed.
Yes.
But we need to come from this common ground, as you say.
Yes.
And absolutely. When we're there, then the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Indeed, indeed. It's similar again, the with the drum playing in that middle part of the drum, getting that bass note. That's like those low notes that you were talking about, the bigger frequencies. That's our foundation right there. Then the higher notes is the conversation that we can have with each other on top of that, right?
And it's funny how this is such a radical idea in our culture.
yes. That's the beauty, right? We've got a lot of opportunities. I
There's plenty
mean,
of work to do.
it can happen even, and this is one of the what this is such a great tool. Here you go, everybody. Egg shakers, right? So I say that this is a powerful tool. There's lots of activities we can do with the egg shaker in community. When I engage folks who are first learning or coming out of the fear of I don't know how to express rhythm or I don't feel rhythmic, I often say, get yourself one of these, right? Keep it with you, keep it in your car, not while you're driving. but if you're in some stop
Good
and go
qualification.
traffic, right? If you get to that stoplight, just have it there with you, listening to whatever your favorite music is. You do that for 3 weeks, I guarantee you'll start cueing into where's the pulse of this rhythm? Owen, listen to those other rhythms that are happening in there. It's a tool for deeper and better listening that's beyond just me thinking, because I'm doing it and I'm feeling it in my body without thinking about it. Something just starts to take over and clicks in. So that's a really nice tool for your groove elixir recipe.
Totally, totally, absolutely. And even just the idea of engaging in your day a little differently than you have.
That's for sure.
And just making this decision, okay, well, I'm going to start consciously bringing rhythm. I'm going to start doing it instead of just listening to it. I'm going to start doing it and seeing how that feels differently than just being a spectator in life.
Yes.
And
Beautifully
it will definitely change the dynamic in the car if there's anybody in the car with you,
said.
right?
It sure does, man.
It will
Imagine.
change people at work if you're doing it at work in your Kia, in your little cubby there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Everybody should have one of these at work.
I love it. I love it. So that's a good way to if you're not one of these people that feels like you've got a lot of rhythm in you. Sometimes when people will say that to me, I'll say, "Oh, okay. Well, so would you please walk across the room and
Right.
walk back, and
Right.
let's." And so it's like, actually, you did that really well. You did that
And you've been
very.
doing it for a while.
I thought you did that masterfully. It's funny how these, like you say, the training that we got around what a musician is, or what a drummer is, or what somebody who has rhythm is, and when you really look at it, it's like we are these things. It's not even that you, it's not that you can do this. It's that that's what you are.
Yes.
So if you're alive, your heart is beating in some level of rhythm, even if there's some arrhythmia in there,
Sure.
it is a rhythm.
Absolutely.
And we just and when we talk, do you know anyone who talks like this, who doesn't sing when they talk? I don't know anyone. I can't even say it without singing.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it is a cliche to say, there's the rhythm of life happening everywhere, and there's the rhythm and flow to every conversation and interaction. Yes. And if I actually pause, feel, listen, and connect, those things are truly present. There is a flow and a rhythm in how our dialogue is happening, and the pauses, and the when you're bringing what you're bringing into it, and I'm bringing what I'm bringing into it. And so becoming more sensitive to that creates a sense of meaningful connection. Again, coming back to that sense of belonging, that we all need as human beings. Right now we're feeling, you know, the impact of what happens when we're not able to connect interpersonally. We can still tap into that rhythm, right? Another piece of it is the beautiful opportunity that I have in being able to let myself express. And again, this comes back to the improvisational element of it. And just giving myself permission to explore, to iterate, to check things out. I believe it was Buckminster Fuller who talked about the precession effect, right? Mm-hmm. That in our lives, it's never about we're going right from this to the end goal. There's, I go here and wow, what I learn here sends me here. And look at that. Now I go, it's a meander, right? It's a beautiful meander to the goal. I believe that a community rhythm experience is often like that. That we have, what's the goal? Well, we're going to connect and we're going to have a sense of feeling the beauty of the rhythm. But it doesn't mean that we get right to it. It means that we allow what emerges in the space to feed, to instruct, to direct where we're going in the flow of the process as we're moving towards that.
Mm-hmm. So that reminds me of a point that was made in a book that I read years ago by a guy named Kenny Werner. Have you heard of Kenny Werner?
Yes.
Yeah. You know his book, Effortless Mastery?
Yes.
My God, is there a better book title on the planet than Effortless Mastery?
Right.
I was like, when somebody told me about that years ago, I'm like, well, damn, that's a hell of a book title.
Let's do that.
I wonder if the book is as good as the title. And it is. And I really, one of the points that he made in there is that, you know, when we're a beginner at something and we, you know, want to, I mean, I was trained on classical piano when I was a kid, and I was a jazz fan, and I listened to Oscar Peterson a lot. And then, you know, when I took some more lessons when I was in high school, my teacher told me about Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock. And so I'm listening to these, you know, and I heard Keith Jarrett pretty soon after that. And so I'm sitting here and my idea of what piano music is freaking Oscar Peterson and Keith, you know, and Chick Corea, like, holy crap. And whenever I would try to improvise something, you know, I could play chords and, you know, I was technically capable. I could do some pretty complex stuff from notes on the page. But then the stuff that I would play if I'm trying to improvise was like so far from my vision of what good improvisation is supposed to sound like that it was always profoundly discouraging. And so this idea of, you know, needing, like you were saying, right and wrong, it's like, well, what these guys do is right. What mm-hmm. I'm doing is clearly mm-hmm. not that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so this real challenge, just being okay. And one of the things that Kenny said in that book is that, you know, be a beginner. Like if you're a beginner at something, be there. Because he said there's some things that you can learn right there where you are. Like you're saying, you know, if you will allow yourself to be where you are,
yes,
then you can learn the things that are learnable from that place. And if you allow yourself to learn that in that place, then as you step forward, you won't have cheated yourself of that thing that you could have learned if you had been paying attention.
Yes, so beautifully said. There's also a vulnerability that happens when I'm a beginner. And I believe that embracing that vulnerability is such a crucial self-loving act. And then the more I practice that, the more I can share that with others when they're in that beginner space, right? Mm-hmm. We're mm-hmm. learning together. I think that's from a cultural standpoint, something so crucial for us to have tenderness and grace and receptivity to is I'm a beginner. And guess what? If I'm starting off something, I cannot not be a beginner. Right?
Right.
So the more that I can embrace that, the more that we can as a humanity embrace that sense of we're still learning, we got things to learn, the more graciousness we can have as we continue our journey. And you can ask any musician, yes, there are going to be people that I consider masterful. I don't know in this lifetime if I'll play djembe like Mama Diketa can play djembe, right? What I realize though is that he's a beacon for me and I'm a beacon for someone else. And it's not about me getting to this end point of now I'm as good as Mama D. It's truly, what have I been gaining along this journey that is feeding my soul, feeding my ability to embrace and engage life with more richness and passion. And then by just doing that, I'm a beacon for someone else.
And you get to not only enjoy your life, but yeah, you get to support people and be compassionate for them.
Yes.
And we all want that for ourselves and our loved ones too. You know, when you were saying that just then, it struck in me this thing that I think is so fascinating about this whole unknown business, this relationship with the unknown. And when you spoke of the vulnerability of being a beginner, it's this experience that if I don't know, like I may be able to figure out something in my head. I mean, what I did with jazz books for years, I try to teach myself improvisation, and the way that I would do it is that I would read chapter one and I'd go, okay, yeah, I know that, I know how to play, yeah, I know that, I got it. And then I would go to chapter two. And then it would, you know, just like in chapter one, at the end of the book, it would say, okay, now play this in all 12 keys. And I was like, yeah, I got that. Okay, now let's see chapter three. And I'd read through it and I'd go, yeah, I understand that. Got it. Okay, cool. And then chapter four. And then before, you know, around chapter five or six, right, it's starting to get complex enough that I actually can't do the exercises. And I realized eventually, literally years later, I realized that one of the reasons that I had so much trouble in chapter six is that I didn't actually do the exercises in chapter one. It's like I read the book on weightlifting and I understood it. And then I read the next book on weightlifting and I understood that. And so it's literally, a lot of this is literally doing the thing and stepping into those places of vulnerability and learning the process of stepping into the unknown that is so we so avoid so much because it just it does it's uncomfortable. It's like, oh, I want to just do the stuff that I feel like I have control over. I don't like this going into this vulnerable place. That's like, no, I don't think so.
Absolutely. That's beautifully said. Beautifully said. There's the unknown is almost the generator for wisdom, right? Because I have knowledge. You're reading that book, or I've taken this drum class. I've got this knowledge. And it's not wisdom yet, right? It's the unknown. It's going into now, how do I explore this? Where can I play with this? How does it connect with me in my life? How do I engage this with other people? As I do that, that's how the wisdom comes from the experience of it. And it's never just thinking. It's a fully somatic, bodily felt awareness experience. That's how knowledge gets to wisdom.
That's where it gets real, isn't it?
Indeed.
I had an experience this morning. I'll see if I can tell you this really quick, but my com basically I had some technical problems this morning that made me worried that my whole website was going to go down. And right, the summit's just about to happen. And this was early this morning. I had gotten a pretty good night's sleep, and I get up and I'm like, I just got went I skipped my morning routine and my morning prayers and stuff, and I went right to the computer and started working. And I ran into this situation where my host, my provider, I tried to upgrade for one reason or another, and I tried to upgrade and it said, you know, credit card declined, your account will be suspended, and you will be refunded the last 6 months of your payments. And I'm like, and I
Oh
wasn't sure. I was, and I, you know, I hit the back button and it showed me that thing again. And then I was like, oh my God, can I even log in? So I tried to log in and it wouldn't let me log in. It gave me that same message. And I'm not sure. I don't even know if I've got the tech support number in my contacts. You know, I was like, oh my God, I can't get in. My assistant can't get in. And I'm like, holy crap. And then it hit me. It was like, dude, you didn't do your morning prayers. And I've never been one of these people in my throughout my life that like has a regular meditation practice or, you know, a prayer life. But in the last year or two, I've been developing that more and more. I've been developing just like, you know, dude, just, you know, I mean, I'm any of what I've got is totally at the mercy of something beyond what I can understand. And so I just, you know, things seem to work better when I just acknowledge that for myself. And
right.
And so I was like, okay. So I came back and I just sat and I dropped into my prayers for 20 or 25 minutes, did the directions. And by the time I got to the end of that 20 or 25 minutes of just dropping in, I felt better. You know, I was like, okay, I'm this tiny, 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 tiny little dot in this ridiculously huge universe. And I'm just this little cell on the planet of Earth. Whatever problems I'm dealing with are just my little piddly things. You know, I exist in this enormous energetic space that's so far beyond what I can possibly imagine and much less understand. And just being in that space, which to me feels like being okay in a completely unknowable existence. You know, it's like it's so far beyond my ability to understand or even like fathom, and to accept that level of beingness in an unknown situation, and like, okay, and then just and allow that trust to emerge. And so I was just like, okay. And at the very end of the prayer, this thought occurred to me. It's like, you know, this situation with your hosting provider will probably just work itself out. And, you know, somebody in tech, I mean, then I started in the explanations, but, you know, somebody in tech support or, you know, their accounting will realize that this person just lost their sign in and that's probably not right. And they'll probably look into it and realize that I was just trying to upgrade my account and they don't want to like dump people when they're upgrading. So I was like, yeah, it'll probably. And then I went up and I sat on the computer and I just checked my contacts. It's like, well, do I have their tech support number? And I did. And I called them and 60 seconds later, you know, it's fine. And then I go on about my day. But it was an interesting little reminder about, you know, remembering that. And another, you know, some of my other guests have talked about, you know, the mystery, that unknown place, the thing that I haven't learned yet, is the core of it. Like, let that be the core of it. And if we can learn how to navigate in that space, even if it's uncomfortable, but to just allow for more than I know to be a part of what guides me and guides us as we, you know, proceed through this very strange existence we're in right now.
Absolutely. There's that vulnerability again in just surrendering, right? Let's see.
Yeah. And, you know, I've got this thing to do now. It's like, do this thing now, you know?
Absolutely. And
move in the direction that I want to go in. You know, there's a conversation with a new friend that, you know, just sort of shows up out of nowhere.
Right. that's the field where from which it all emerges.
Way cool. Yeah. Well, Solomon, I've really enjoyed this, and I trust that this will be the beginning of a beautiful friendship, as Humphrey Bogart said.
I look forward to that very much. Thank you.
Do you have any suggestions for how people can contact you, or I think you might have something you'd like to offer the people who are watching this thing?
Yeah, so I'd like to offer. It's a free PDF on 5 ways you can bring rhythm into your workplace. And we'll give some overview on activities, some instrument recommendations, and just some things to keep in mind when facilitating team process.
Awesome. It's a very, very generous offer. And, you know, I would imagine that, you know, why not check that out? And how many workplaces and right now, just ways that we could bring rhythm and into our engagements, into our virtual engagements.
Indeed.
And
Indeed.
Many different possibilities that are there for us. So awesome. Thank you, Solomon. really, really fun. And I appreciate your willingness to come on and do this with us.
My absolute pleasure. And y'all just keep grooving. Keep grooving out there.
Grooving. Do that groove elixir.
The unknown.
Absolutely.